5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Thank you. Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room on, April the 11th, 2024. And yet we missed last week, not through our own fault, but technical issues with the hosting platform. So, of course, they haven't bothered to apologise. So I will apologise on their behalf. And, I deliberately played that song because the quiz this week is you've got to write in for this one and the winner will get a free book or something. Who's bagged tickets to CLO in Houston in October? So that's the quiz. And speaking of tickets or quizzes or just wonderful, wonderful people, here she is. Do you want to have a stab at this week's quiz?
I thought I was exempt from it. I heard you rambling on about a quiz, and I was like, you know, I think I missed that day in school. So, I wasn't really paying attention to what the quiz was, you know. Which is probably, you know, that's probably why I did not do well in school.
Probably not. No, so it's a bit of a year because at the end of this month, I'm going to go see the Rolling Stones. I'm actually taking my daughter because, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, it could well be our last chance. I'm excited. I saw them many, many years ago back in England, and they were phenomenal then. Obviously, Charlie's not with them anymore, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's fun enough with ELO. I always said, you know, if they ever come to Houston, or even to Texas, or anywhere close, or even America, I'll move heaven and earth to go see them. And then they announced that they're touring. I think the first date of the tour, I think it's the first date, is here in Houston.
Awesome. So, I think I would actually go see them. It's a concert that I would definitely go to.
Oh, they're touring now. I mean, they announced a tour, and I was one of those. I set my alarm and I booked the tickets like 5 minutes after they went online. So there you go. There you go. But we missed last week, unfortunately. So this is, you know, third time's a charm for this one, and we've got I presume we've got some people lined up and stuff. I'm guessing. There's usually something going on a Thursday. Well, I was last week. We were there, and we already. I pressed the button. It said technical issues, so fuck off. And I just went to bed. I just went to bed and watched I'll tell you what, guilty pleasure. There's a British TV show. I think you can find it, I forget what channel, what network it channel it's on, their streaming platform, called Naked Attraction. I think I mentioned it before on the show, and it's like a dating show, but they're nude, and you get, if it's say the woman picking or a man picking, and they have six different pods, and they reveal the people, the nude people, literally a section at a time, starting with their the front bottom area, and it's just. I think the funny thing is, I don't watch it for, the boobies and willies and stuff. Yeah, that's just, but I like that. I don't know, just I think it's just so weirdly entertaining. And then I like, when they make their choice, then they go on a little date and I'm just seeing the dynamic. And
naked.
No, they don't go on the date naked. They do actually get dressed.
Okay, well.
Can we call it dating in reverse, They start as a good date will finish, which is naked. Although, in my case, a date finishes with me going home filled with bitter disappointment. And probably for the lady as well. I recommend, if you ever get a chance to see it.
Mm.
In fact, I'll send you a couple of episodes across so you can have a giggle.
Definitely. In the evenings, like around dinner time, we've been watching. So I read the book Firefly Lane, and it was a decent book. I really enjoyed it, and I saw that it was on, I think Netflix or whatever it was on, and it was a little mini series. I'm like, oh my god, I would love to watch that, and I started watching it, and I'm into the second season, and I can't even tell you that I like it. Because it's so different from the book. Every single episode, probably every 15 minutes, I'm going, that didn't happen in the book. And I'm so angry about it. But I'm still watching for some reason. So
I've never heard of it. I don't even know what it is.
It's just chick lit stuff. It's nothing, it's nothing amazing. It's definitely a lot of drama going on, but I enjoyed the book. It was a nice, easy read, mm-hmm. and I thought I would enjoy the show, and I can't say that I hated, but at the same time, I'm like, none of this happened in the book. I don't understand and I even saw a comment one time, somebody said that their favorite character was this one mother in the show. And she was an awful character in the book. As a matter of fact, I mean, probably the worst character I've ever read about. I hated her so much. And they're like, she has such a great character development. I'm like, well, not in the book. She didn't. So I'm like angry all the time about this show. So I don't know why I'm still watching it.
I can say,
so
don't watch
it.
Funny enough, I just, because I don't like to talk about it, but when I had my nasty cold a few weeks ago, I binged watched Peaky Blinders. And somebody could have said, you got to watch Peaky Blinders. And as you know, I'm not a big fan of period fiction because it's based in sort of early 1900s Midlands in England. And I really enjoy, I literally binged all of it. And in season, because it sounded like each season, because the Peaky Blinders are these Birmingham-ish-based gangsters, basically. So each season, they were up against different gangsters sort of thing, season three, they fell foul of the Italian mob. And they had, I almost stopped watching. They had Adrian Brody, who, if ever you want to spoil a show or a movie... Yeah, Adrian Brody, and he played this Italian mobster, and he was like, thrift store Marlon Brando Godfather, and he was just like, he was chewing the. I was glad when there was a spoiler alert when they shot him in the head. Shoot the fucker already! He was awful. It was awful. Luckily, I enjoyed it enough to see past that and then got into season four and it sort of redeemed itself. But I just like, don't. Everything I've seen Adrian Brody in, he's ruined it, to be honest. I can't think of anything he's been in that's been good.
Yeah, I can't tell you anything off the top of my head either. But yeah, I'll definitely keep that in mind, though.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I don't recommend
if you want to watch Peaky Blinders, skip season 3. There you go.
I can do that. Yeah, good deal.
So, anywho, thankfully, no Adrian Brody on the show tonight. because he would just ruin it, spoil it. So, who have we got who is not going to spoil the show tonight?
Yeah, I want to take a second here to thank them for agreeing to come back after, I don't know, the third, fourth time. I don't even know how many times I've had to reschedule them. So I'm really happy that they're still stuck with us. But, yeah, this week on the Panogram, we have authors from Hellbound's anthology, Happy Holidays. So we have Stone Wallace, woo, and we have Rami Unger. So, woo, I'm very excited to have them both.
So are we having them on together, or how is this going to happen? Should we do that?
Yeah.
Let's just throw everybody in and have a jolly old crack open a virtual bottle of bubbly and have a... So announce them again, and I'll press some buttons at this end.
All right. We have some of the authors on from Hellbound's anthology, Happy Holidays, Stone Wallace and Rami Unger.
Hello.
Hey. Hello there.
Oh.
Yay.
All happening at once. Hey guys. So we've got Rami and we've got Stone. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm a lot better now. After thank you for asking. After getting over my. My cold. I thought I was going to die. I really did. It was just going on. It was on and on. I was just, it's
I was sorry to hear about that. Yes, I know those things can linger and make life pretty miserable for a while.
Oh well, I think to be fair, it makes makes life miserable for everybody around me. I think more than me because I'm terrible. I'm a terrible patient. I'm awful. I'm just a grumpy old. I'm more grumpy than usual, put it that way. But
I think most men generally are a lot worse at handling illnesses than women are. My wife was ill right around Christmas. Our Christmas was completely ruined because of it, and it seemed to linger and linger and linger, this virus that she had. But I'll tell you something: she was a much better sport than I would have been.
Yeah, well, women they're tougher than us guys because of all the childbirth. Body blah, all that stuff, you know. We get a sniffle and we're at death's door.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's plus as well the women, you know, without sounding too sexist here, you know, they have to look after us guys. Thankfully, I had my daughter, bless her. She cause normally, you know, obviously I look after her because apparently I'm legally obliged to, but. She would make me soup, and she looked after me really well, bless her. So, big nod to my daughter. She helped me.
You know, James. We never really grow up, do we? The men, the women mature a lot faster than men do. I mean, I heard that years ago, and never really gave it much thought. But I think I've discovered since then that's a truism.
Absolutely, yeah. I think in many ways, I think. Yeah, you're right, Rami, you're right. I mean, I think we sort of stopped developing at about 12, 13, mentally, emotionally and mentally. I think we still laugh at farts and do stupid, childish things. The number of times my daughter will say, you're such a child. You're such a child. So, you know, why did you do that? Well, because I wanted, you're just a big kid, aren't you? Yeah, pretty much. But then again, I mean, being a grown-up is terrible. You know, being a grown-up is awful. I don't like it. I just want to be a kid again.
You know what's funny, James? James, years ago I was talking to my father. I was about, I guess, maybe 12 years old, and we were driving somewhere. And I said to him, I said, Dad, I sure wish I was your age. He said to me, I wish I was your age. I had no idea what he was talking about until I reached my age today. And I realized, he was totally correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And my parents always used to, don't be in a hurry to grow. Oh, you're my grow. And I say exactly the same to my kid, because, you know, I can't wait to be a grow. No, don't. And I tell them, my daughter, I mean, my son's, he's grown up now, but, and I tell them, you know, about paying taxes and the bills, and I've had to pay this, man, da, da, da. So she says herself, being a grown-up sucks. So yes, it does. And hold on to that. You know, enjoy being a kid with no responsibility. The only responsibility she's got is to her grades. You know, keep your grades up and where everything's all right. That's it. You don't have to worry about any of this other bullshit we have to deal with.
If there are any kids listening to this, just remember, don't grow up. It's a trap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's overrated. It really is. I mean, when you think of the things you can do as a grown-up, balanced again what you used to be able to do when you were a kid, it really is not a good deal. It is not at all.
Oh, my goodness. I want you to talk a little bit more about the book that we're all here to discuss now. I mean, we could ramble on and on about
it. Do we have to?
Yeah.
I would just rather have a grumpy old man show.
You know, but we have to schedule one of those because I think that we'd have a bunch of callers if we did that. That would be amazing. Because, you know, we do need that every so often. But
you have a good old moan.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I do think writers are able to be a little bit more, a little more adjusted because we can write about our, anything bad and just kill off the bad people and just be creative like that, which I don't think everybody, I don't think everybody else can do that and kind of they're not as adjusted for that reason. That's what I think. But yes, we're here to talk about Happy Holidays. And I do have to say, I absolutely love the cover of this book. This is one that even though I get new Hellbound books, I still keep Happy Holidays like at the top because I think it's got such a cool cover there. I like to look at. But,
right.
So let's start with you, Rami. What was your story in Happy Holidays?
My story is The Wild Hunt, and it's a Christmas horror story.
Definitely. I did some really creepy horror poetry with a Christmas themed before, so I definitely can dig it. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, it's about two sisters who run away from home on Christmas Eve and encounter the mythical Wild Hunt, and I wrote this story because, A, I wanted to do a variation on a theme and be a Jew who wrote a Christmas horror story rather than a Christmas musical number. And I wanted to do something other than Krampus. And The Wild Hunt, they have a lot of stories actually set around that time of year. So I was like, let's research The Wild Hunt, create our own little twist on it, and see where this goes.
I definitely like that. I heard that. I have not had a chance yet to read Happy Holidays, but I've heard that there are some really wild holidays that people picked to write about. And what about you, Stone? What was your story in this anthology?
My story was called A Grave Undertaking, and it's based around Halloween, but there's a little bit more to it than that. It's to speak about myself a little bit, I'm a romantic. I mean, I might write horror fiction and crime fiction and that, but I'm truly a romantic, and this story basically deals with a twist on unrequited love, which I think a lot of us have experienced in our life, with a bit of a macabre twist to it.
I have to admit, Halloween is, well, Halloween and Christmas both are my favorite holidays, of course. As soon as we hit probably September, I start getting excited for the whole rest of the month. And, you know, then I'm, you know, find myself into January and February, March and freaking April, where I'm like, I'm just so sad because it's no longer the most wonderful time of the year. but definitely, yeah. So let me see. I think we had a... let's start with Rami. I think you had an excerpt that you're going to read for us.
Yes, I am.
Yay!
A familiar
set it up or... Go ahead.
Oh, well, if you guys have a musical tone to set it up, I'm good with that. I've never been on a podcast with this much music, and I'm loving it.
No, I was going to say if you needed to set up the scene or anything like that, you can go ahead and do that.
Okay. Okay, so the at this point in the story, the two sisters have run away. One of them, Tatum, is in a wheelchair, and they've just been caught by a deputy who worked with their abusive father. So now they're waiting at the police station for him to come pick them up. And, well, let's get into it.
Awesome.
A familiar four-door black truck pulled up outside, parking at an angle as it skidded through the snow. When their father stepped inside the station, flakes of snow melting in his hair, his face was red and his fists were clenching and unclenching. Both girls shuddered and held each other tighter. Both of them, especially Tatum, had thought of their father as a monster before. He'd been a lazy, no-good, violent man who had drank and abused his wife to the day she died, and then abused his older daughter the same. But now, nearly steaming with anger, he appeared more like a marauding beast than anything that could be made for a horror film or a dark fairy tale. "Do you bitches know how much trouble you're in?" he roared. Both girls flinched and Mia whimpered softly. "And why did you have to pick tonight of all nights to run away? Don't you know there's a fucking blizzard outside?" "Cool your jets, Chris," said Gates, putting down his coffee and taking hold of Tatum's chair by the wheels. "You can give them hell once you get them back home. Just don't do anything that would require a cleanup crew, okay? I'm not sheriff yet, after all." "Sure," Chris spat. He grabbed the wheelchair from the other side. "Whatever. He helped me get them in the car." Together, they lifted the chair and carried it outside to the truck, setting them down by the back driver's side door. They didn't resist, too afraid to try anything, at least until their father tried to lift Mia out of Tatum's arms. Then, like a lightning bolt, Tatum pushed herself up, grabbed Mia, and pulled her back into her embrace. Both men stared at her like she'd gone crazy, and their dad muttered, "What the fuck? No." Tatum squeezed Mia close as the little girl wrapped her arms around her older sister's shoulders. Dad's eyes narrowed. "No, no," Tatum insisted, an anger she didn't know she was capable of feeling taking hold of her. "Don't you dare fucking touch her." Dad's lips pulled back in a snarl and his arm shot forward, grabbing the collar of Mia's nightdress. "Don't you tell me no, you little slut." He yanked Mia out of Tatum's arms and lifted her into the air. Tatum screamed and reached for Mia, but a punch from their father's free fist sent her flying out of her chair and into the snow. Something warm gushed from her nose and turned the snow around her face red. Gingerly, Tatum lifted herself out of the snow, wiping the blood from her nose away with the back of her arm. She looks about at her father just in time to see him smack Mia full across the face with the back of his hand. A guttural roar escaped Tatum's throat, and she somehow managed to launch herself at her father, wrapping her arms around his legs while biting his thigh. Dad cried out and let go of Mia, who fell to the ground and scrambled to Tatum. Dad then kicked them both away into the snow before stalking towards where they lay, his fists clenching and unclenching again. Tatum lifted herself up onto her elbows, her face and stomach now throbbing with pain. Despite that, she managed to gather Mia to her, comforting her sister as best she could. Already, the blood Tatum had spilled was gone or disappearing under the thickening snow. A few feet away, Dad and Deputy Gates were arguing, probably about better places to take out his anger at his daughters instead of in front of a sheriff's station during a blizzard. Tatum glanced skyward. Why won't anybody help us? Whether it was a question or a prayer, she wasn't sure. All she knew was that she and Mia would probably be dead or in agony very soon, and she hoped it was dead. Anything was better than continuing to live under their father's boot once they got home. Above their heads, several horses whinnied. Chris and Deputy Gates stopped arguing, looking around in astonishment. Tatum looked as well. She'd completely forgotten about hearing animals and people on the winds earlier. But when the two men had carried her and Mia outside, the only sounds had been the wind howling and the snow crunching underfoot. Now the howls of dogs were rising from all directions, as were the pounding of hooves, and they were getting louder with every passing second. In the snow, Mia crushed herself up against Tatum's chest. "I'm scared," she whispered, shivering in a way that had nothing to do with the cold. I know," Tatum replied. He then admitted what, under other circumstances, she would never admit to her little sister. "I'm scared, too." A few feet away, both men were still looking around, and Tatum heard Gates say, "They sound like they're right on top of us." Their dad opened his mouth to reply. Suddenly, the air was rent with a metallic crash. Tatum and Mia screamed, staring up in horror and awe at their father's truck, which was now crushed under the massive hooves of a giant white horse. On its back was a figure wrapped in a dark brown cloak and hood that fastened with a black and gold brooch. The figure slid off the horse, its cloak whirling around it to reveal a black dress and a pale, emaciated frame, though a pair of breasts still rose under the fabric covering the chest. The figure's face was completely hidden by the hood, for which Tatum was grateful. If she would see the figure's face, she was sure it would be more terrifying than the woman herself. Dad and Gates backed away from the truck, their faces a portrait of terror. Gates' mouth was moving, and Tatum thought she heard him say, "I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and he who sat on it had the name Death, and the forces of hell were following with him." A voice spoke from the hood, deep, raspy, and somehow as clear as a bell over the screaming winds. "Dost thou think thyself men for hurting children? Dost thou think thyself strong?" The men flinched at the sound of the woman's voice, and one of them even yelped, though Tatum wasn't sure which. From inside her cloak, the woman drew a long black staff and pointed it at the men. "I shall grant thee to the count of 10 and 1 score, she said. "After, the hunt shall begin." As the woman finished speaking, dozens of dogs appeared around them, all white and tipped with red on their ears and tails. The dogs growled, barked, and whined, baring teeth that looked more like fangs. The men shouted in surprise, while Tatum and Mia screamed as they found themselves surrounded by the white hounds. The dogs, however, didn't seem to notice the girls, their attention directed at Chris and Deputy Gates. "One," called the woman. The dogs parted, leaving a path of escape for the two men. "Two." Chris and Gates didn't wait for her to say three. Instead, they sprinted through the knee-high snow, past the dogs and away from the sheriff's station, disappearing into the gloom and swirling snow. The hounds turned to watch, but none of them chased after the retreating men. Several seconds passed, during which the cloaked woman continued to count. The same time, several more figures appeared around the sheriff's station, in the streets and on top of vehicles and rooftops. Some were on horseback, while others ran on 2 or 4, even 20 feet. It looked like they were running or galloping down invisible paths from the sky above the earth below, while others seemed to pop into existence between blinks of the eye. Nearly all of them looked like creatures out of nightmares. Tatum spotted knights in spiky armor wielding all manner weapons, flames leaping from eye sockets and gaps in their armor. Translucent spirits, many of whom appeared to be teenagers and children, flitting among the knights and horses like dancers, and monsters with multiple arms, spikes and horns, forked tails and bat-like wings. She wondered if Gates had been right when he mentioned the force of hell following death.
I hate to have to stop you, but we're going to run out of time if we don't. But no, that was so good. Thank you so much. And you,
I was enjoying that.
Well.
I was enjoying that. How dare you?
I only had a paragraph or two left anyway, so no biggie.
I'm going to have to go downstairs and grab my book and read some more while we're we're going to take a quick break, I think. So don't anybody go anywhere. We're going to come back with our reviewer, Samantha. So everybody just stay where you are.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two of the new Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, we are back, and you know, it is my favorite part of every show, and I have to say this. She doesn't believe me. She thinks I'm, you know, being ironic, but no, it is. She always cheers me up, and it is. It's Samantha. Hopefully. Hello.
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 We were waiting for the cool intro there.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we were pushed for time.
We were pushed for time.
I really couldn't be bothered tonight, so.
Well, we appreciate the honesty.
Right. Yeah. That is something he is good at. So, Sam. What do you have for us this evening?
So I finished a collection earlier. I read it just. It's been in my TBR for a while, and I just wanted something different. And it's called Fleshed Out by Rob Ulitsky. And it's a body horror collection. This one's really cool. It's like the body horror that is like jellified and it oozes and is like wet.
Yeesh.
And squelches. It's like that type of body horror. Like I just expected it to be a different type of body horror based off like the cover, because the cover is a guy like cut up in parts inside of a vending machine because it's one of the stories inside. I think a different type of body horror, but this one's great. The first story is about hair. I didn't think that hair was a trigger for me, but apparently it is. There's a story in here called Neoton. It's like this universe is like states on its own. Think like Ready Player One, but body horror and wet and squelchy. And his girlfriend like rips the thing out of the wall and doesn't realize that she's majorly fucked up. He gets stuck in this worm, and it's like really, really cool. There's a story called Heal that makes me think of Rose Red from like the Stephen King series.
Right.
This one's really, really good. The cover's great. I haven't read this guy before, so I'll probably read more of his stuff. It was just oozy and gross.
Yeah, it sounds awful, but I'm so glad you enjoyed it. So, yeah, we are, like James said, we are definitely pressed for time tonight. So give us, let me know what it's called again and who it's by.
It's called Fleshed Out by Rob Ulitsky. And I think I could give it like a good, like, 4-star. It's really, really good.
Wow. All right. Yeah, everybody listening, go out and pick up that really gross-sounding book and let us know what you think. And, yeah, thank you so much, Sam, for braving the weather.
Samantha,
she said it's
we love you.
Storming there. Yeah.
Yeah, I love you guys. I'll see you next week.
Okay,
yes,
bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, bless her. Bless her. And, yeah, let's bring our guests on. We've got Stoner Army back on. Are you still with us, guys?
Yes,
I
am.
Yay! Awesome. Awesome.
Enjoying the program.
So am I.
You know, so many weeks, Xenia will admit to this as well, because it's late, we have long days. Oh, we don't really feel like doing the show. But as soon as we start... It's great. This is our social life. This is it. Because I don't get out much. That's a fact.
It is
and
sad.
You can do it while you listen.
Yes. Yeah. I did have a question for you, Rami. When you see, and I guess this can be for both of our guests, but when you see a call for an anthology, do you go, I think I have a story for that, or do you... the call and be like, I'm going to have to come up with a story for that. Like, which one is it?
Both. You can go first, Rami.
It's both in my case. I think one or the other thought just goes through my head, and if I can, I'll submit something to the anthology call. And every now and then, something comes of it, like the Wild Hunt.
Awesome. And for you, Stone?
James would probably understand this. I grew up with the Amicus horror films, the ones that starred Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and the movies like Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, The Torture Garden, Tales from the Crypt, The Vault of Horror. And even from that time, when I would watch these films, or I'll read the novelizations by the author Jack Orlach, I would always think of stories that I could add to that because I thought, instead of fleshing out a narrative to the extreme, you could put your horror into a nice little package there. So I look at those and I say, yeah, that's kind of fun to condense your ideas into those condensed formats.
Mm. Yeah, and keep looking at the time going, oh my gosh, we're going to have enough time. I would, you have an
excerpt.
No,
we're fine. We're fine.
I know.
We're good.
We're called the Panic Room, so I panic. And
yeah, but to be fair, after coming up to 9 years doing this now, you should be fine.
True. Yeah.
You should be. But no, yeah, I mean, just to pick on that point, you know, I think I'm sort of half with Rami, half with Stone. You know, I mean, there's been a couple of times where I've had a story on the go, or one, you know, that I've seen a submission call or I've been invited, and I just happened to have. Well, the fact that my very first story in the Texas Roadkill, I think it was in Roadkill 2, and I'd written this great little story, and then I saw this call, and literally I just tweaked it a little bit so it took place in Texas. It didn't take an awful lot, but Mark. Again, because I live in Texas, I qualified anyway, but I just wanted to make it in Texas. But funnily, I've been invited to Texas horror authors, to write a Western horror. Mm-hmm. And that is actually underway now. And that is one where I thought, well, I didn't have anything. I'd never written anything in that genre ever in my life, ever. So it's fun, actually. I'm doing it the other way now. I'm sort of writing specifically for that subject, which is interesting for me. It's not something I'm used to doing.
It's kind of fun to cross genre, isn't it, sometimes to take a... Like, I've published many Western books, and I've published horror novels, and I did write a short story that combined both genres. And it was kind of fun to take that approach.
Hey, I'm finding it is fun, yeah, because it is. It's two genres, and I always enjoy the research part of it and doing the researching the details. You know, the little details that sort of that make a story. You know, so that the weapons are the right weapons, and you know the politics of the time and what is going on is, you know, so you've not got, you know, you don't spoil it for people who know. You know, any Western fan would know, you know, that this guy was president then. And I'm fascinating, absolutely thoroughly enjoying it. I'm looking forward to seeing how the story turns out. I mean, it's a good old basic horror, but it just happens to be based in Western times. And I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but it's fun. Like you say, yeah, it is great to cross over genres every now and then.
Absolutely, yep. They're very, very creative.
Oh, yeah.
So I did want to ask you, Stone, is there any genre that you have not written in that you would like to?
No, boy, I've done everything from horror to Westerns to romance to crime. You know, I never thought I'd become a Western writer, actually. That all came about by accident, by an interview I did with the actor John Agar, and that's how my first Western came about. I ended up writing 8 Western novels. Boy, you know what? You know what? I think the one I've kind of touched on, and it's going to be a book coming out, actually, through Hellbound, is really deep science fiction. And I think the book I have coming out, Child of Adam, kind of fits into that, but it's probably more horror than sci-fi. So, you know what? I don't think there's really something I really haven't touched on too much other than that.
Jack of all trades. I am very excited to hear your excerpt that you have to read for us. Yay.
Okay. Again, this is kind of based on unrequited love, and the inspiration for this is actually a song by David Gates from Bread called Aubrey, which is not one of the group's better-known songs, but it's a very haunting melody, and it kind of created the kernel for the story. And I'm trying to find the right spot in which to read my excerpt so I don't give away too much, but still have a little bit of the horror here, so I will start from this part here. "You want to do what?" Sydney exclaimed, astonished at what Cassandra was suggesting. Cassandra pushed her body closer to his, still tempted by his desire to actually fulfill what so long had consumed his fantasies. Sydney hesitated only for a moment before biting down on his lower lip and giving his head a slow but deliberate shake. No, I don't think that's going to happen, he said, suddenly shifting his body aside while pushing out his words in frustration. I admit it's a little strange, but so am I. I have peculiar desires. I'm okay with that, I guess, that you're, as you say, a little strange, but this sounds like more than just a peculiar desire. Then why did you agree to come out here with me? Cassandra asked petulantly. I wanted to be with you, Sydney answered timidly. And you are. Yeah, I didn't expect this. Cassandra sighed dreamily. Well, I find it somehow appealing, even charming. So did Dracula, Sydney muttered under his breath. Cassandra gave him a questioning look. Hmm? Huh? Oh, nothing. Nothing important. I just think there has to be some place, well, more appropriate to, you know. Cassandra sighed again. Well, that's too bad you feel that way, because I know just the perfect spot. She eyed him seductively. If you're up to it. Sydney didn't answer. He appeared tentative, though the invitation was proving hard for his male desires to resist. Take a chance, Cassandra gently urged him, penetrating him with her feline eyes. Prove to me you have an adventurous spirit. You won't be sorry, I promise. There are a lot of guys at Sherwood High more adventurous than me, Sydney admitted. I'm not interested in them, Cassandra said, her voice firm. Not tonight. Not tonight? What was that supposed to mean? Was she looking at him as merely a one-night diversion? And why? What did she really have in mind? Cassandra reached across and took his hand. Just trust me. Sydney almost recoiled from the touch. Her hand was cold. Her long, tapered fingers felt like icicles against his flesh. Again, trust me. Sydney searched for some sort of a stall so that he could regroup his thoughts. Do your parents know that we're out tonight? Sydney suddenly asked her. Cassandra responded with an expression of surprise. My parents? Sydney nodded and then shrugged. Yeah, you know, your folks. Just like to know a little about them, that's all. You know, you being their daughter, your peculiar taste, as you put it, and that maybe I might not be a part of the all-American family? Well, sort of a strange way to put it, Sydney said uncomfortably. Is that important to you? Cassandra asked with a frown. No, I guess not. No? Just making conversation, I guess. Cassandra's attitude darkened, and at that moment, for the quickest instant, Sydney detected a slight change in Cassandra's appearance. Brief, fleeting, but unsettling, like a malevolent shadow passing over her features. He quickly dismissed it as a trick of the shifting light as the shadows lengthened in a prelude to nightfall. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Brilliant. Love it.
I was going to say, I guess I know what I'm reading this weekend so that I can get the ending to both of those stories, because those are pretty awesome. And you read it very well as well. So, which I have to always remark on that, because I am just terrible when it comes to reading out loud. But we have a special caller who wants to say hi to you guys.
Oh, isn't wonderful!
Hello, caller, mystery caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
We
hello. Teresa Scott Matthews.
Hi,
can
Teresa.
You hear me?
Lovely to hear you.
Okay, I know I don't have much time, okay, so I'm going to make it short and sweet. It was such a joy to work on this anthology. The authors were terrific. Stone, Rami, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Thank you for having us.
And I am walking outside in the wind, and it feels great.
Gust of wind in Florida?
35 miles per hour.
It's probably like 100 degrees out there, though, right? You're in Florida, so it's always hot.
No, I mean, it's nice at like 70.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad.
So,
thank you
so
much.
I want to give a special shout-out to all the authors that worked on Happy Holidays. The stories were great. I mean, they put their all.
It is a great book, and I can't wait to finish it myself. But thank you so much for calling,
Teresa. I love you guys.
I just want to say a big shout-out to Teresa for pulling together such a great collection of stuff. I know it was difficult to pick and choose because we had a lot of great submissions.
It's very hard because you get so many great stories.
But you did a cracking job. It's one of my favorite anthologies. Really, really good. Love
Thank
the premise
you.
As
Thank
well.
Thank you. And, you know, you guys, I'm working on the flash fiction anthology. So be sure to pick that up. Hell,
definitely.
Pick up all the Hellbound books.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No,
buy all of them.
Thank you, Teresa.
All right. I love you guys. Have a great night.
You too. Have a good one.
Have a good
night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Always
so,
a treat.
Yeah, we are getting close to being out of time, but before I do let you guys go, tell us where we can find you online. Rami, you go first.
You guys can find me at my website, ramiungertherider.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, and YouTube.
Wow, you're everywhere. Awesome. Stone, where can we find you?
Well, probably the best place is my website, which is www.stonewallace.net. But I'm also on Facebook, and I've got a few things that are on YouTube, but basically things I've done for videos and that, giving background information on films. But, those would be my two main places would be Facebook and my website.
Awesome. Awesome. And I did want to thank you guys again for being so patient and, through all the technical difficulties we had. And I thank you so much for coming back on the show. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and pick up Happy Holidays by Hellbound Books. You have lovely stories by Stone Wallace and Rami Unger and a ton of other great authors. So thank you so much. And we definitely have to have you guys back on.
Looking forward to
great.
It. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, guys. We'll speak to you again soon.
You betcha, James. Thank you so much. You guys have a great night.
Yeah, and
talk to you guys later. Have a good night and a good weekend.
Cheers,
Rami. Pleasant night.
And you. Okay, yeah, absolutely. And to you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Time has beaten us. I told you we should have done 90 minutes, but no.
You did.
You know better. So it is, unfortunately... It is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Woo! Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm missing the lips I am missing and hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you tomorrow.